Hi guys. So, no demo for me. I'm just here for some food for thoughts. And I will talk as a social scientist about a specific case. What I want to do, I have very little time, so I will move very fast, is to make two things. First, a very, very short history of Jupyter's notebooks, and then sort of a plea for better knowledge of the way scientific softwares are made and their history, because I think it lacks a lot in our area. The question is, and my starting point is, where are our stories of scientific software right now? I mean, outside the specific events and globally in the main scientific area. Because software, and won't say a lot about it, are everywhere, and they run from bespoke code to interstellar stars. So we are softwares everywhere in research, but very little stories of how they have been made and how they evolved. And social sciences rarely looked at those softwares, and when they look at them, they show there are very specific dynamics going on. Research softwares are open-ended, they are looking for uncertain aims. Researchers are usually non-specialist developers, and there are very specific funding constraints on how software are developed. And these are specific consequences on the way those specific kinds of software evolved. The code can have some breathlessness. There is a lot of intertwinement with scientific activity, and it led some researchers to become specialized in software engineering and developing, you know, software. And it led to a lot of specific journalists of friend. We have seen one with Jeffy Light just at the beginning of this dev room. So I want to take a step back, and because there is a lot of open question about that. First, how can we tell the stories of our scientific software, and how social sciences can tell stories of scientific software? Because there are different journeys, especially in open source, and there are different steps in the history of each scientific software. Sometimes it stops, sometimes it continues for years and years. And on a broader level, there are much intertwinement between open source and academia. And especially, what are the links between open source and open science, and how the connection is made between academics and software engineer. And just to quote Christopher Kelty in Two Bits about Unix, the fact that Unix spread first to university computer science departments and not to business government or non-governmental organizations meant that it also became part of the core pedagogical practices of generation of programmers, computer scientists. So there is something connected between open source and open science. And I want, in my very little time, put this idea to work with a specific case, which is the case of Jupyter's notebooks. And to say it in one sentence, innovation, it is an innovation going from research to become a worldwide infrastructure of data science. It was released, notebooks were released in 2011, 2012, and spread everywhere, and they won the ACM award in 2017. And it is a perfect viewpoint to see how scientific software emerged, how it progressively get more and more abstract from this point, the starting point in the laboratory, and diffuse within and outside academia. If you want a long version in French of this story, there is a paper in HAL, but I will keep it very short. I'm not here to advocate about Jupyter notebooks. I use them, I love them, but I won't try to convince you, and I'm quite sure there is a lot of people against them around here, and if you are not against them, but you want to see why people are against them, just have a look to the Joel Gross talk. But I make an assumption that you know approximately what Jupyter's notebooks are, because I have no time to discuss about them now. What I just want to say is a very quick story. It is first a PhD student, then a specific script, which is IPython, then notebooks appeared, and finally we got Jupyter, as we know currently, which is basically an infrastructure for interactive data science with different kind of languages. And you can see this evolution with the IPython dev mailing list, with the progressive emergence of notebooks around 2010 and the appearance of Jupyter. I just go back on those different steps. So let's dive in this history. The important part is to have the context of the early turn of the millennium. And we are at a moment where we had a lot of achievement with the free software movements and open source development. And there is around the laboratories paradigm of literate programming. From Donald Knuth, and for people coming from computational science or mathematics, there are a lot of proprietary open software specialized for interactivity with programming like Maple, Mathematica, or MATLAB. And at this moment, there are also the beginning of the scientific Python community, which just is starting to develop with the first SciPy workshop organized in 2002 in Austin, Texas, especially by the South. And in this context, Fernando Perez was at the beginnings of IPython and then Jupyter, was a PhD student in his fourth year, trying to finish his dissertation and wanting to move from proprietary software to open source and Python, and need something more interactive, you know, to do his work. And IPython, which the script which will become IPython, was a simple personal fix for a problem of his own workflow. And he was really grounded in his common sense as a researcher in physics and computational science. So he wanted something to program, to make sensory programming with interactivity. And this was the idea and the value inside this moment that will unfold in Jupyter. In this specific case, the SciPy community, so the scientific Python community, was quite an amplifier. And there was a very quick reception, enthusiastic reception by this community, and the company which backed SciPy and thought posted IPython, the first version of IPython on their web page. And they get a lot of support from this community, feedback and contributors, and quickly after they start, other contributors join the project, especially Brian Gunger, who jumped in 24. And they managed to secure the financial possibility to continue, and it was attained with postdoctoral grants that Fernando Perez get at Colorado Boulder, and then thanks to the support of a team in Berkeley, which he joined in 2008. So the fact is, IPython is something really well grounded, you know, in academia and in scientific community. If you look to the main contributor of IPython, you have almost everyone was a PhD, was some of them have academic position even later after the emergence of the software. And notebooks in this context was just a feature which appeared later of IPython. And because 2004 and 2011, the project developed, a lot of, you know, support were given by the Python community, and they added a lot of features and tried multiple times to add, you know, a notebook feature because it was something already here in other software. They had five missed attempts before they were able to make, you know, a first stable version of notebooks because some technology, especially for browser, was not available. So in 2011, 2012, a release of IPython included IPython notebooks. It was the beginning of the history of Jupyter. And it works pretty well because it was really quickly adopted by the scientific community well outside, you know, the first specialty frontiers of the developers of IPython. And in 2021, Nature can put IPython notebooks as one of the 10 codes that are making science, sort of, it's a huge thing inside the scientific community. But progressively, the notebooks became something more important, and they led to abstraction of what a notebook is and the way researchers are using programming in their work. And there are also two dynamics. The first, it was a movement of abstraction out of the Python community, and on the other one, it was strengthening of the practices in the project of software engineering. And this allowed the project to make a split and to move from a very specific IPython Python tool to something more general, more abstract, which became the Jupyter project. And it was backed with $6 million grants of foundations that support open science. So it was a huge move because it led to refactoring the code, change the philosophy, reconceptualize the whole project, and there was a lot of money involved because it needed a lot of, you know, hiring of software engineering to do so. So at this point, Jupyter became something which escaped the academic world and had a worldwide adoption. Notebooks became standard of data science, and they were integrated a lot of services like, you know, Google Colab or used in third-party, you know, tools already existing like Visual Studio Code. So it was, you know, a turning point in the way this initially scientific project became something way bigger than scientific community. And somehow I will stop here because it opened a lot of questions. Of course, for the research community, the questions are, who are the current users of scientific of computational notebooks? What kind of work are they doing? How does it make the way we are programming change? But at this point, the question I want to carry here is, does Jupyter project or softwares are still scientific software? And so how does something which was created inside within the scientific community is starting to get another dimension and to be something bigger or no more, you know, a research tool? So just to wrap up, because I am going to the end of this presentation, I want to stand for more historical documentation, not only documentation of code, but historical documentation of how those specific software journeys are associated with scientific specialties, institutional background, funding possibility. And the need to take this specific dynamic seriously, because, of course, for computational notebooks, as we are trying to do with other colleagues in different projects, and there is a GitHub repo if you want to add some archives in this story, but also for all the other tools that are inside our laboratories, in our daily routine of scientists, because they are a huge part of the way we are, you know, crafting knowledge, and they don't have the same history than other more material, you know, artifacts and scientific instruments, as telescopes or particle accelerators. So it's my point. I finish here. Thank you. Sorry for the speed.
I have a question. How do you define scientific software?
Oh. Very neat question. How can I and how can we define what is scientific software? And I think the only way I can answer that is that software crafted within the context of scientific research at some point, and that are built not for making, you know, a complete tool, but for answering specific research questions at some point in the advancement of knowledge. And usually there is a nascent literature about the way that scientific software are really different, like that don't take really seriously into account, at least at the beginning, versioning, test units, that are quite scraping the good practices of software engineering. At least at the beginning, and then if the software is still around a few years after and gain more users, it started to integrate those good practices. So somehow there are two universes, but more organizational and social universe different. And I would say scientific software are defined by the